Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Yes, indeed, a seamless counterforce. I don't have to edit this later. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very auspicious, if I may say, day in the Good Listening To Show clearing. It's Charlie Higson is here. And Charlie, I'm lucky to have you because you're opening the fast show.
You're very lucky.
Very lucky. Sorry,
I interrupted. Yes, we're just about to do a fast show tour. We've got a week of rehearsals next week leading up to a kind of warm-up gig. So,
yes, and hashtag awkward. I was in the Beacon in Bristol just 3 days ago going, oh, I'll just get it. And you're completely sold out throughout the nation, in fact.
No, it's a tricky one because Mark Williams is about to start filming on Father Brown and Paul's about to start filming on some more fishing program. So we only had really a couple of weeks. And so we thought, well, let's test the waters, see if people are interested, see how the show goes. We'll do a couple of weeks. And if it's popular, we'll do some more at a future date.
Yes, and talk about popular, that's got bells, whistles and knobs on in terms of it, that's popularity right there because it sold out before we could even announce it, I think.
It did, yes. Sold out in 2 hours and we had all this sort of press lined up and adverts and things, which...
Yes, you didn't need.
There you go.
So if I could just blow a little bit of happy smoke at you and just contextualise why you're here, I expect you're wondering why I've called you here to The Clearing. This is the show in which I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes. You'll see where you're fitting right in all of those, to a clearing or serious happy place of my guests' choosing to all share with us their stories of distinction and genius. And it's my great privilege and pleasure to have Charlie Higson here. I know you know who you are, but just to blow a bit of happy smoke to contextualise, can I say when you were born? Is that allowed?
Yes.
In the 19th century. 1958 in Frome, Charles Murray Higson. You're an English actor, comedian, author, podcaster. I love and adore your Willie Harry Stee podcast. You're also prolific because you're about to do the Fast Show tour again. Also, you've been part of the Ian Fleming Foundation. You've written 5 of the Young Bond series. And in fact, I've already interviewed Steve Cole, who inherited the mantle from you, I think, as part of the Fleming Foundation, to continue the thrust of your Bond.
Yes, he did. He carried on doing the Young Bond. But actually, earlier this year, in May, I did my first adult Bond. So that was nice, which was on His Majesty's Secret Service. It was a special charity thing to coincide with the coronation.
Yes. And I'm particularly happy to have you here because one of the bits of feedback I once had about this show is it's like a day spa for your brain, which reminded me of a sort of Swiss Tony-esque, slightly cheesy line of, you know, being in this podcast is not at all like selling a car, which, as you say, is like making love to a beautiful woman. So, yes, I'm going
to... Let's see how it goes before I commit to any pronouncements like that.
Yes, and the Fast Show is just so full of bangers. I've just adored. I mean, you may or may not decide you want to talk about that, but Painting with Johnny is my absolute favourite sketch, which I
he's surprising over the years. He's become sort of more and more popular. It's one of those ones that people seem to like, and it was great fun to do. Just we went to some very nice parts of the country and did a bit of painting.
And then, very rolling hills, yes,
and absolutely. Then it all kicked off, and I could just go nuts. The joy of it was that the sort of lines, the poetic lines of madness, were written by this amazing writer called Brendan O'Casey, who wrote quite a lot of stuff for the Fast Show, because we were all writer performers, and Paul and I, Paul Whitehouse and myself, wrote the bulk of it, but everybody else wrote, and we also took in submissions from anyone who wanted to write in, and Brendan Casey started sending stuff in, which was unlike anything anyone else was writing. And so those lines worked so beautifully for that character.
And indeed, I've just been watching, you know, when finally Johnny becomes unhinged, they're here, they landed on the pier. And I'm wearing his favourite colour, by the way, which we won't mention, obviously. So it's my great delight and privilege to curate you through the journey of where there's going to be a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There's some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a golden baton, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's absolutely all to play for.
A squirrel cake, lovely.
Yes, extra nuts and cherries. So, Charlie Higson, if I may call you a versatility and polymathic pants, for all the reasons I've already explained, what is a clearing for you? Where does Charlie Higson go in your busy and hectic schedule to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
The bath.
Love that.
In the bath. I don't like showers. I mean, one uses them to get clean occasionally. But
I do that.
Bath, like twins. Bath is a spiritual experience for me. And for me, it's really useful because, you know, when you're in the bath, no one can get to you. You're kind of cut off from the world. You're not going to be on your phone unless you have either a death wish or you want to get rid of your phone. And you're not at a computer or a screen, and you're not. I mean, I used to read books and things in a bath. No more, because I do appreciate the time of just being able to switch off all of that and be alone with your thoughts. And, you know, if anyone asks me what I do, I say I'm a writer, and that's what I spend 90% of my time doing. But writing is not just the act of sitting down at a keyboard or with a pen and paper. You've got to have something in your head.
Yes.
When you get to that space. And often, you know, I'll be writing and I'll be stuck on something. I can't sort it out. And having a bath is a way to kind of just open everything up and let things float. And yeah, I do quite a lot of my writing in the bath, in my head.
Lovely. And are we talking candles and bubble baths and sort of, you know, sumptuousness?
Or a few essential oils, yes. A bit of bubble bath. I mean, not a sort of comedy overflowing one or like they use in films to cover your modesty. Yes. A couple of candles help, yes. Just because it's nice to be in a warm, comforting environment and a feeling of safety and enclosure.
Love that. And if I may ask a personal question, when did you last have a bath, please?
Well, it's my bath night tonight.
Whether you need it or not. How lovely. So think of me in your bath just for a few moments, and that'll mean it's time to get out of the bath.
That'll ruin the whole experience.
And you're in good company, by the way. Next level going to the bath. There's a director called Phelan McDermott who goes to a flotation tank, which I think is probably the next level.
You know, I've always fancied that. Been very interested to see how that goes. I mean, that is totally cutting yourself off from everything. And yeah,
yes.
I gather people go off into weird places in their head.
I'm sure he does, but I think he definitely does. And also, you can't stick your toe in the bath in a flotation, in the tap, I mean, in a flotation tank. So you're the first person, actually, by extraordinary coincidence, in 200 episodes that I'm now just about to be in on the cusp of, nobody said the bath. My daughter said a shower, and as I say, right. Dermot said, so yes, nobody said the bath, so I commend you for your bath. So is it your a familiar bath or any bath that works for you?
Any bath, really. Although it's surprising how many baths get made that actually just don't work as a bath. They're too short or they're too long. Usually the worst ones are you go to in a hotel somewhere and they've given you a huge statement bath and you just slide about in it and fall under the water and just can't get comfortable.
That's not relaxing at all, is it, when they're too opulent?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimising your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living. A people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so we're in your bath.
So yes.
I'm now rather comically, which is the construct of what we're going to do, a bit Waiting for Godot-esque. I'm going to arrive with a tree now in your bathroom.
I'm happy to be in a bath in a lovely woodland clearing and with the sun coming down through the leaves. And yes, here's a new tree.
Oh, look at all those greens shining through the trees. So, yes, Waiting for Godot-esque. I'm now going to shake your tree to see which story-selling apples fall out. So you've been kind enough to think about, you've had 5 minutes in your bath or elsewhere to have thought about four things that have shaped you, Charlie Higson, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up. That's a bit more squirrels, you know, what never fails to grab your attention, irrespective of anything else that's going on for you in your hectic life. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you. We couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. So it's not a memory test. I'll curate you through it. So interpret the shaking of your canopy of your tree as you see fit.
So where do I start?
Let's go for four things that have shaped you.
Four things that have shaped me. Well, do you want them all first or go through them one by one?
Ah, now it's open to interpretation. You can do bish, bash, bosh one at a time.
Well, all right. Well, I'll start with back. Number one. I'm going to do this in chronological order of how they shaped me or when they arrived in my life. One would be just a pen and paper.
Lovely.
A pen and a piece of paper, because I got hooked on writing when I was quite young, when I was a kid. I got hooked on... I've always loved creating things. I've really been into art, but also into writing. And I got hooked on the idea that you can take a pen and a piece of paper, you need nothing more, and simply by making those weird squiggly marks, you can create something that wasn't there before. You can tell stories, you can create characters, you can create whole worlds. And that, to me, seemed to be a really powerful form of magic, and it's something that has stayed with me all my life. You know, I've been lucky enough to be paid to make stuff up.
And what age were you? And I know you obviously picked up a pen at school straight away, but what age did you suddenly have the epiphany that this is something that's my happy place and it's going to help me?
Well, I start. You know, I would get little exercise books and write stories in them. You know, nicked off other things that I was enjoying. I was only a child, I didn't have much world experience, but probably, you know, like 8-9 years old, I was doing that and doing comics and things as well. Yeah.
So an empty page isn't sort of writer's block for you. Empty pages, anything is possible for you.
No, gosh, yes. I mean, I love it. I mean, you know, if you can't think of anything to write, you can always do a doodle.
Lovely. So you're a doodler too. That's an extra.
Yes, but no, I don't. I don't have time for writer's block. I'm too busy. I've got more stuff to get on with than I will have time in the rest of my life to actually do. So
and you're writing a new book as we speak, I understand, as well. Another one of the Enemy book series.
No.
Aha. Okay.
Gosh, I finished them a few years ago.
I blame my researcher, which was me on this occasion.
Sack him. Get a new one. What am I writing? I'm in the final stages of finishing a kid's book. It's a sequel to a kid's book I had out a couple of years ago called Worst Holiday Ever. And this one's called Worst Superhero Ever. It's about this shy boy who accidentally gets a part in a TV series about superheroes. And he's not very happy about it. So yes, I'm doing that. I'm about to start work on another book, which I can't actually talk about at the moment. And I've got a couple of TV things in development. So yes, I am always busy. And we've got this fast show tour. I mean, you know, I became a professional writer when I was about 30, and you know, it's my job. I do office hours. It's my day job. It, you know, when the kids were young, if I wasn't writing, they would have no shoes to wear to school.
Yes. And intriguingly, when you first got going, I know you started by squatting in London when you moved away from the University of East Anglia, where you'd met Paul Whitehouse already, and you were a painter and decorator. And I researched that you'd even painted and decorated Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie's house, apparently.
Yes, that was one of the jobs that I did with Paul. It was at a time we'd known Harry Enfield. He'd been a friend of ours for years. We were working as decorators. He was working in TV, and he knew Stephen and you and knew they needed decorators. He said, "Oh, you should use my mates, Charlie and Paul." So we did.
Was that the name of the
firm? We did a very nice job. They were very happy with it, but they did the classic thing. There were four students, friends, and they bought a house together.
Yeah.
And then as their careers took off and their wealth accumulated, they moved out, at which point Paul and I bought the house off them. With a couple of our friends. So it worked out very well.
Very good. And is that where you're sitting now? Is that the same house you painted?
Or? No, that was two houses ago.
Bless you. So we've done number one shape, which is a pen and paper, unless you'd like to tell me anything else about that. And then now it's the second thing that shaped you.
It would be Monty Python. You know, I remember, you know, when you're a kid, there's programs you watch with your family that become very important. So, you know, classic things, Dad's Army, yeah. Malcolm and Wise, all of that kind of stuff. But there are also, if you're lucky, a comedy will come along that you think, this has been made specifically for me. And you watch it not with your parents, but it becomes your thing. And Monty Python was that, you know, it was an attitude, a sense of humor that spoke to me. I mean, it's tricky now going back and watching the Monty Python TV series. So much has changed in TV since, and our expectations of things. But, you know, I remember at the time I would look forward all week for it to come on and absolutely immerse myself in each episode and not want it to end. And one of the things I really loved about it was the endless creativity and the endless invention in it. But also, and this, did, you know, saw more and more of that over the years, was that the show was made with a great deal of care and attention and pride. The craft of it was amazing. And, you know, when they did the two books, which I bought as soon as I could, again, you just see the level of detail and the thought that went into that. They weren't just tossed off comedy books. And that's something that I've really taken on board in all the comedy that I've made over the years, is I have really tried hard on the craft side to make it as well as I can, something that I will be proud of in a few years' time. That was always more important to me than whether it was a massive hit.
And the through line of care and attention is right there with the resonance of the Fast Show, because that absolutely has the same attention to detail and a carefully curated.
We were able to do that partly because Paul and I ended up producing it. It hadn't been our plan, but we couldn't sign up the two or three producers we really liked worked with and knew. And one of them, amazing comedy producer called John Lloyd, said, "You know what you want to do. You know the show inside out. Why don't you two produce it?" We hadn't thought of that. We thought, we could actually do that. And amazingly, the BBC said, "Yeah, okay, here's a load of money. Go away and make us a show."
What a great producer he was in just letting you go fly free with it. Let you go feral, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had learnt a lot. I mean, me particularly with Jeffrey Perkins, who we'd first worked with on doing Saturday Night Live with Harry Enfield, doing Stavros and Loads of Money. And he was a very, very generous man. He really liked discovering new talent and nurturing them and showing them the ropes. And when we came to do Harry Enfield television program, his first sketch show with me and Paul, Jeffrey was producing that, and he let me kind of shadow him almost. You know, yeah. I was next to him in rehearsals. I was next to him in the recording booth. What do you call it now? I can't even remember.
The gallery. I'm just guessing.
The gallery. Yes. he taught us everything, so that when we got to the Fast Show, we did feel confident enough that maybe we could do this. Yeah.
And you're in good company, because of course Stan Laurel was very much the sort of production side with attention to detail, and he was always there working long after to sort of curate the excellence. Mm. Yes.
And while Oliver Hardy was off enjoying himself.
Yes, playing
the races and smoking cigars and drinking and having nice meals. There's Stan at home tearing his hair out, writing some more stuff.
And with regard to sort of what goes around comes around, because you work in the same world, have you been able to sort of personally thank the Monty Python squad for the sort of great inspiration?
I've met Terry Jones, and I've met Michael Palin a few times, and yes, obviously told him how important everything they'd done had been. Mm. I mean, you know, at the time, being a kid, I had no thought that I might end up ever making television. But, you know, seeing the things that they did, and things like Rutland Weekend Television that Eric Idle did, and the Michael Palin series. What was that called? The different stories each week.
Hang on. No, you just said it. I know exactly what you mean. Ripping Yarns.
Ripping Yarns, yes. So, you know, loved all that stuff. And, you know, bits of it fed in. I mean, when Paul and I came to make comedy, we didn't stylistically do what Monty Python did. We didn't have that sort of, for want of a better word, surreal edge, you know, edge of silliness or zaniness or whatever. And there was a bit of silliness in what we did. Ours was probably more, you know, grounded, but, you know, the way they created characters was very influential on us.
And talking of which, I just adore the pathos in Ted and Ralph in what you have curated there. So that's another thing that I've just always liked to return to.
That was amazing that those characters became so successful, because they were completely against the ethos of the Fast Show. The sketches are quite slow.
Yeah.
There's no real catchphrases. And it's really about the difficulty of human beings to form relationships.
Absolutely. Wonderful second shapage with the accolade going to Monty Python. Shapage number three, please. By the way, I've got a bell in case we get lost. Cash
okay,
in.
Okay, yeah, if I'm please. Rambling.
No, you're not. It's my. I'm just immersed and happy. So it's shapage number three, please.
Well, it would be punk rock.
Ah, yes. Because not least because you had your own band.
Well, I did. Yes. And the punk rock came along. 76, I was what, 18?
You were born in 58, so quick maths, 76, yes, good luck with that.
So, you know, I was a teenager, and it came along at exactly the right time in my life to kind of excite me. And I think it was, you know, it was a time in my life when I was coming out of myself. I was leaving home, going to university. And, you know, it's hard now to look back on punk rock. And if you weren't there, you wouldn't have been aware of just what a change it made to everything.
Yes.
Because it lasted, a couple of years? And there wasn't vast amounts of really brilliant music that came out of it. You probably could make a good triple album of the good punk tracks. But the ethos behind it was what was so revolutionary. The idea of you can do it for yourself.
Yes.
And it was all the stuff around that. You know, people were making clothes and fashion for themselves. They were producing fanzines and comics and stuff like that. And there was the music, there were visuals, there was an attitude of you can do this. You don't need three articulated lorries and the world's biggest drum kit. You know, you can just go out there with any instrument you get your hands on. You don't need to spend years learning the ins and outs of music, as long as you've got energy and enthusiasm, and, you know, a desire to entertain, and all of that fed into the whole of society. It led to a lot of things. It probably led to alternative comedy. Again, there was this feeling we don't need to do it like they do in the old days, you know, dressed up in a dinner suit in some stuffy club or ballroom somewhere. It's like, well, we'll do it in a pub, we'll do it, yes, you know, in some grotty back room somewhere, and yeah, we'll just go up and do it, have a go. We don't need to spend years writing gags or having a team of gag writers for us. We'll just go out and see what happens. And also, I think, you know, that then led on to the whole explosion of independent production companies in the 80s. Again, it was like, you don't need to go down that lengthy, laborious route at the BBC of starting at the bottom, maybe writing for radio, building yes, your way up, and having to, you know, that whole monolithic structure that the BBC is. It was like, no, just get out there and make your own shows. So pretty much everything that happened through the 80s with me, because I was in a band in the 80s for 6 years, and then getting into TV comedy was just, well, let's do it. Yeah.
And it was Right Hand Lovers. Is that correct? I can.
Well, my first band, yeah, 1977, with Paul Whitehouse. We met in Norwich at university, and we were both wearing straight jeans, so we knew what type of music we were into, what our attitude was. Because still then, 77, most people were wearing flared jeans and had long hair, but, you know, we had short hair and straight jeans. And so the obvious thing to do was to start a punk band. So we did.
And I noticed you then sort of upgraded your own billing by having a band called the Higsons next.
Yeah. Well, in true punk spirit, most of the people in the Right Hand Lovers were kicked out of university and the band folded after, well, less than a year. But I love music. I love making music. And I wanted to form another band. So we got together with some new intake of students and, yeah, created a band, which they came up with a name. It wasn't my idea. We needed to put something on our first poster. And yes, they sort of said, that's such a crap name for a band. It would be quite cool. Let's call ourselves that.
And the rest is history. Lovely.
Yes. Or consigned. So,
Fourth Shapage now in the curated structure of what I'm drawing you through.
Well, I touched on it there. It would have been meeting Paul Whitehouse.
Ah, yes, indeed.
You know, if I hadn't gone to University of East Anglia in Norwich, I don't know where my life would have gone. I would have ended up being a writer of some sort. But my career, which I've been very happy with, really was formed entirely by meeting Paul and other people at university, but mainly Paul.
And what was the first meeting? What was the first impression?
Well, as I say, there was someone with straight trousers. So yeah, yeah. We probably got together and went to a gig. There was a lot of good live music in Norwich. And yeah, we made each other laugh, which we still do, luckily. And, you know, that's a great way of bonding. And we were completely different people, which has also helped. He's very loud and extrovert. He's the kind of life and soul of the party. He's always doing funny voices and impersonating people, and has that great energy. I am more cerebral, I suppose, in my approach. I'm quite shy, so I kind of stand back and observe more. Yes. And, you know, Paul is very much has that energy of splurging things out and creating things. And I am then there doing the Stan Laurel, I suppose.
Yeah.
Organizing it, structuring it, putting it into a story, formatting it or whatever. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but that's kind of how we come to it. And, you know, like a good marriage, you're far better off if you complement what the other person does rather than you both do the same thing. Otherwise, there's no point in actually being married.
It's great advice for the listeners generally about all sorts of things. Lovely.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
But now on to thank you for the four shapages. Three things that inspire you. Now, if there's any overlap, don't worry, but three things that inspire you, Charlie.
Yeah, now, God, I wrote it down. Yeah, I got confused between the shaping me and inspiring me. Books have always inspired me. I have to say that. I love reading, and I always have done, and I love the way that the books can take you out of yourself and take you on an adventure all around the universe sometimes, and that you connect with it in an emotional way and a kind of intellectual way that you don't do with any other media, really. And it's a shame that people are reading less. Well, they're reading less of the sort of self-contained book, as it were. I mean, they're obviously reading a huge amount online, on their screens, on their phones. But that unique relationship you have with a book is you know, always been incredibly important to me. Now, a lot of writers say, "Oh, if I'm writing something, I can't read another book in case in case some of it seeps into my writing. And you think, well, fool, read a book by someone who's really good and hope that some of it seeps into your writing.
Yes, please, let it bleed across. Yes, absolutely.
So books, yep. There's one.
Yeah.
Well, another thing, and I'm basically just saying this as a form of self-promotion, is when I was at school, I'm probably the last sort of generation of school kids who were taught in a sort of old-fashioned way before, you know, I think through the 60s and 70s, education was revolutionized quite a lot. It wasn't that sitting down while a school teacher just told you things. But certainly with history, I was taught a sort of narrative history, and it was just British history. Mm. You only learned about anywhere else in the world if it was somewhere that we'd gone and invaded and colonized.
The empire. Yes, absolutely.
But that narrative thrust of what happened in history, which you know, some of it I've remembered, a lot of it I've forgotten. But one of the things that I did remember was I learned the rhyme Willy Willy Harry Stee Harry Dick John Harry Three, which you mentioned earlier, which is a way of remembering all the British monarchs from William the Conqueror up to the present day, up to Elizabeth II as it was then. And, you know, almost didn't ever get to update it. It was on the throne for so long. But it was something that stuck with me, and it led to, in recent years, I've really got into history. I've been a regular at a fantastic history festival called the Chalk Valley History Festival, which is also part of this whole inspiration of a history, I suppose you could call it. Mm. I originally went to host, they do a sort of comedy history quiz with historians. But I also do a history talk each year, and I've been doing that for over 10 years now. And on the back of that, I thought I would do a podcast. I wanted to do a podcast to teach people that narrative history of our monarchs, and to use them as a lens to look at wider British history over the years. So yeah, let's say history.
Yes,
is my second inspiration.
And Willy Harry Stee is the name of the podcast too, and
yes,
it is too. Wonderful. So that's a great. So your third inspiration.
I've only got two written down.
Two's fine.
I was sure I'd filled it all in.
Which means, if you like, we can now go on to two things that never fail to grab your attention, which is the borrow from the film Up. Oh, squirrels, you know what never fails to grab your attention, irrespective of anything else that's going on for you.
Well, to tell you the truth, either of these would count as a distraction and an inspiration. So if you'll allow me that.
Yes.
And they're probably the same things that distract most people. It's social media and playing games on my phone or on my computer. Which are a huge distraction, but they are also, I use them as tools. They are very useful. I mean, social media, for all its ills, it's like the world. The world, there's some good things in it. There's a lot of bad things in it. There's some confusing stuff, some stuff that makes you furious. And social media reflects that. How could it not? How could it stay as being some weird utopia where everybody's lovely? Yes. That's not how the world works. So, you know, I do find it useful to see some of the things that some of the people out there are saying. Luckily, I've never been trolled or monstered or had a pile on. So I've been quite lucky. And I do try and pretend to be quite genial on social media.
And coming full circle, what's lovely, there's a universe in your hand with social media, but also with your piece of paper and a pen, there's a universe in your hand.
Yes.
So there's a through line of simplicity in that.
Yes.
But also,
I mean, one you're creating yourself, and you can get lost in that. You can go down a rabbit hole of you know, writing a novel. It's what it's all about. But yes, a computer is a window into the universe, which can, or a doorway as well. So it can suck you in. But, you know, social media has been very useful for writers because we spend our lives in places like this, where I'm sitting now, by ourselves, tapping away, spending time with our imaginary friends. So to be able to communicate, and probably really properly for the first time, with people who read your books or watch your shows, because the past, you write a book and you send it out there and you have no idea who's reading it and what
no feedback. Yes.
You know, occasionally it's never happened to me, but you know, some writer gets very excited because they see someone on the tube reading their book. Nowadays they're all on the phones. They could be reading your book on the phone. I pretend they all are.
Oh, and were you happy the other day, by the way, because I sent you a photograph of I found in a cabinet in a reclamation center.
Yes.
The book, your book, The Dead, was in a cabinet that was being sold as a job lot with lots of other books, but yours was one of them.
Very nice on one level that, yes, it's going, hopefully going to a good home. Yes. But there's also the other level of someone's thrown this out. But yes, no, I mean, social media and the computer is a great way. You know, I can keep in touch with other writers. I can keep in touch with readers. I can keep in touch with what's going on. But it can chew up your time. I mean, if I'm properly spending time on it, it'll be when I'm, you know, on a journey somewhere and I've got time to myself or whatever.
And your favorite place to write is right where you're sitting, is it? Is that, that's obviously your home.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked from home from when I was, gosh, late 20s. Mm. And I've always had a home office of some sort. And, you know, when I got together with my wife, she knew, you know, that was what my lifestyle was. And if I was in my office, I was at work. You know, it wasn't like time to, can you just come and help me with this? I mean, obviously, I'd do if it's something.
Yes, obviously, you're a good husband.
But, yes. You know, but she also now works from home, so she has her own office. So I've always been comfortable with working from home and working by myself. And, yeah, I do like. I can work kind of anywhere, but I am comfortable in this office.
So as we know, give you a bath and an office, you're off, basically. That's you at home.
I know, and it's, you know, it's a weird lifestyle. Sometimes at the end of the year, you think, what did I do last year? Oh, yeah, I sat in that room typing things.
But
that's not entirely true, because through writing, I've had such amazing opportunities. And
yes.
Things to do. I was just the other day. I was at Buckingham Palace.
Were you, dear? You dropped that in nicely. What were you doing there?
For over 10 years now, I've been one of the judges on the 500 words competition.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
a story writing competition for kids, which is huge fun to do. And for the last few years, the Queen has been quite involved with it. She's a big patron of literacy charities and things like 500 words. So this year it's all at the palace.
Lovely. So now it's a one quirky or unusual fact about you that we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us to finish.
Now this is one I've been really scratching my head over, because by the time you've done 10 interviews where they've said, tell me something that no one knows about you, I've kind of run out of stuff. So I wish there were more quirky and interesting things about me that people didn't know. I mean, I did murder that person one time, but I try not to talk about that.
What was that? Sorry, you murdered a person.
I murdered a person.
That's quite a good unusual fact.
I really shouldn't have told you about. In secret.
Oh, it's out now, but don't worry about it. That's fine. So you're unusual.
The great thing about being a writer is you can murder as many people as you like.
Yes.
In your books. If there's someone you don't like, you turn them into a character in a book and push them off a cliff.
Yes. A bit like, oh, did I say that out loud? Oh, did I actually do that out loud? I've actually killed you. So that's quite a good fact. I'll have that one.
Okay.
Your Wikipedia, by the way, is full of quite quirky facts. So if you ever get a bit stuck.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, but people know that you said it's got to be something that no one knows. It's on Wikipedia, it's hardly secret, is it?
Good point. You've got me on a technicality there. Lovely. So we've shaken your tree. Hurrah. So now we're staying in the clearing, moving away from the tree. Next, we talk about alchemy and gold. When you're absolutely at purpose and in flow, Charlie Higson, it may be self-evident, but what are you absolutely happiest doing?
Well, I think it's what we've been talking about for the last 40 minutes is I do love writing. I mean, a lot of writers say they don't like the process of it. They like having written something. They like being a writer, but they don't necessarily enjoy the process of writing. I do. I'm never happier than if I'm really stuck in on a project and it's really going well and it's flowing out of me. I mean, you know, it's hard work. you have to write and rewrite and rewrite and rewrite and keep going over it. But it's something that I like doing, shaping words. So yes, it's no great revelation, but I'm happiest when I'm writing. Yeah.
And how do you capture your ideas mostly? Are they just all in your head, or have you got sort of journals and books just all over?
I don't have journals and books. I mean, occasionally I'll write something down, you know, just before going to bed. I think, well, that's a good idea. If I've come from the bath, you know, the classic waking up in the night, well, I must write that down. But whenever I've done that, I look at it the next day and I think, what?
Why did I think
that was such a great idea? I have relied on keeping them in my head, and I've always worked on the principle that if I remember it, it was a good idea, and if I forget it, it was a forgettable idea.
Nice adage for self-control. I think that's fantastic. Okay, so now I'm going to award you with a cake at Charlie Higgs.
Lovely.
So this is the last sort of multi-layered cake of suffused with storytelling metaphor. So do you like cake, first of all?
I'm not a huge cake fan. I like a dry chocolate cake.
It shall be yours. A bit like a sort of, not a Black Forest gatto then, that's a bit soggy.
No, I don't like cakes full of fruit and cream and stuff that squirts everywhere you try and eat it.
None of that. Okay.
I like a chocolate cake that's a few days old and gone a bit stale.
So if I was ever to post you one, it's quite good if I do it by second class and you can just get it nice and dry. So
I'll get to put it about 5 years' time, the way the post works these days.
And now you get to put a cherry on the cake, which is stuff like, what's a favourite inspirational quote, first of all, that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future?
Well, there was a very good quote. Elmore Leonard, great American crime writer, writer. He was about to go on a radio show, I think it was. And they said to him, could you just give us like 10 tips for writing? And he thought, well, he's been slightly thrown in the deep end there. So he said he just wrote these things down really quickly and went on. And these have now become enshrined as the 10 greatest tips on writing by any writer, which he did by accident. And they are very, very good. It's about simplicity and directness, and it's about communicating with your reader and making sure that they want to carry on reading what you've written. And one of them, and I'll paraphrase slightly, he said, you know those boring bits in books that you tend to skip over? Don't write them.
Yes.
And, you know, and it is a great piece of advice to a writer, because often you'll be thinking, all right, I've got this great bit happening here and this great bit happening here, but I've got to get them from here to there. And they need to, you know, they've got to do this stuff and make friends with people. And then you think, oh, well, why do I do that? No, that's boring. Let's just go from there to there. I'll find a way. So, you know, get on with it and engage with the reader and engage with yourself and write what's entertaining you, and not just think, well, I've got to do this to make it a proper book or a proper bit of TV.
And is the sort of top 10 tips from Elmore Leonard are sort of established, so people Google that, they can find all 10.
Yeah. If you put in tips for writers, it'll be one of the first things that come up. But obviously, if you put Elmore Leonard's tip for writers, it'll definitely be the first thing.
Marvellous. I read a lot of Elmore Leonard, which got me into James Lee Burke by some circuitous route, but it was still into American crime fiction, which I love. So
yeah, well, I really got into crime writing in the 80s, which was a real golden age. And it was American writers like Elmore Leonard were really coming into their own. And also the publishers were rediscovering and republishing a lot of old crime books, a lot of noir and pulp crime fiction and stuff. And you know, I loved all that. And I really got into that. And that was my first love. I wanted to be a crime writer. And I wrote, in the early 90s, I wrote 4 crime novels. But then TV took over, and, you know, making The Fast Show was a full-time job, because Paul and I, we were writing it, we were performing in it, we were producing. So we were sitting in the edit. You know, we were there from start to finish, and we'd get to the end of one series and we'd have to start another.
Next question is, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Well, when I was about 16, my father was an accountant, and he went on to become a management consultant. And he was very much, you know, he was born in the mid-20s, and he was very much of that part of that conservative with a small c generation that had come through a lot of difficult problems of the 30s, and obviously the war years, and you know, Britain after the war was not the sort of golden age of wealth and prosperity that America had. We were still struggling, and yeah, they were still rationing when I was born. And he, you know, he knew that I loved writing, and he sat me down one day and he said, "Look, I think it's great that you write. I'm very proud of the things that you've been writing, and you obviously get a great deal of satisfaction out of that. But make sure you get yourself a proper job, because you will never make any money as a writer." And the reason this was such good advice was because I was 16, and all 16-year-olds completely ignore the advice of their parents.
Indeed.
And deliberately try and do the opposite. I have never had a proper job as such. I mean, I was a decorator, but I was self-employed. I've never had a boss. I've never had to do that kind of 9-to-5. And I've been hugely lucky to have been able to make a living as a writer. And to, you know, to still be doing it now is fantastic. And I haven't had to take my father's advice and get a proper job.
Lovely. And on that happy note of not in the end having to follow his father's advice, this rather sadly brings us to the end of time for this week's episode of The Good Listening To Show on UK Health Radio. So yes, that was the wonderful Charlie Higson. If you'd like to listen to the end of his episode straight away, wherever you get your podcasts, just look out for The Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. The podcast proper, by the way, is hosted on Buzzsprout. The full episode will also be available on the UK Health Radio podcast shortly too. So sincere thanks to my guest, Charlie. He'll also be a rather illustrious addition to the Genius Club on the goodlisteningtoshow.com website by virtue of the fact he's been my guest. So yes, if you too would like to be in the show, then just get in touch. Again, care of the website. There are a number of series strands which will help you work out how exactly you'd like to get involved. So yes, until next week, I've been Chris Grimes, that was Charlie Higson. To your good health, and goodbye.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.